Hello, welcome to our webinar today. I'm Mark Smith and I'll be your host and presenter. It's a pleasure to be with you today. It's noon here in Salt Lake City and maybe good morning or good afternoon to you wherever you might be. Our panel here and she will respond to your questions and they are welcome at any time. The purpose of today's presentation is to put together a series of webinars that would be available to volunteers and new employees coming into the credit union starting with the first of the year. And we're reorganizing this a little bit. And so these new series of webinars, four of them, will be available the first of the year on our website in that format, in that series format, to be downloaded and viewed at the viewer's discretion rather than having to tune in for a webinar. Okay, so let's get going here. Okay, the objective of our discussion today is to provide an understanding, some basic instruction and insight into the concepts of gap analysis and income simulation and interest rate risk, abbreviated IRR. Most of you are probably familiar with that abbreviation. Give us just a second here. I think we may be having some audio issues. Okay, I think we got them straightened out, hopefully. These computers have become so complex that sometimes they bedevil us a little bit. Our monitors out in the other room were not picking up the audio, so I think we got that straightened out. Okay, so that's the objective, is to understand the basic concepts of gap analysis and income simulation as they apply to interest rate risk or IRR. What we're going to do today is we're going to identify and talk about significant balance sheet related risks because the credit union is a financial institution and it's a creature of its balance sheet. If your balance sheet faces a risk, it has the potential to have a huge impact on the overall operations of the credit union. So that's where we refer to these as balance sheet risks. And anything that is a balance sheet risk is important by definition. We're going to talk about the concept of balance sheet optionality or member optionality. And this just refers to the options that the credit union has and that members have to impact the balance sheet. We're going to talk about two basic analytical tools used to estimate and manage balance sheet risks, and in this case, interest rate risk. I should have put that in there. And those are going to be gap analysis and income simulation. First of all, we always do this slide. The credit union is a full service financial institution. It's really important that everybody understand the credit union is a business with no guarantee of success. It may be a non-taxable business, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have to be profitable. The credit union absolutely has to be profitable for the simple reason that that's the only way the credit union can obtain capital in order to grow and prosper. And the credit union is a creature of its leveraged balance sheet. The operative word there is leveraged. The credit union is a leveraged financial institution. I would describe it as a highly leveraged financial institution. In most cases, the credit union is leveraged with funds that it has borrowed from its members in the forms of shares and deposits, but leveraged nevertheless. the responsibility of management, which includes the majority of those of you attending today, directors and senior officers and officers of the credit union, your job is to identify, estimate, monitor, and manage those balance sheet risks, in particular today, interest rate risk. Notice we said estimate, not measure. It's very, very difficult in our minds to measure interest rate risk. It's an estimate in every case, but needs to be identified, estimated, and if it's excessive, needs to be managed and dealt with. So let's go ahead and do poll question number one. Let's go ahead and see if I can. Remember how to launch a poll question. Here we go. What is your position at the credit union? A senior officer, another employee, director, volunteer, or other? If we could get everybody to respond, that would be helpful. Okay, and we're up at almost 100%. So we're going to go ahead and close the poll and share it with you. So there's the responses. So most of you are officers of the credit union or employees. Looks like not a lot of directors or volunteers. So as we move forward and make this available, we would hope you would encourage your volunteers to watch this. They don't have to do it. They can do it from home. They can do it on a phone or an iPad. Whatever that's going to take. So let's hide that. Okay, and then move on. So the risks that we're going to talk about today are primarily interest rate risk. And there's two really general forms of interest rate risk. One is mismatch risk, and that is simply the risk that the amount you earn on your assets, loans and investments, will get out of sync with what you're paying for your funds, which are mostly shares and deposits for the by far the majority of you. So they're mismatched. Your net interest income, or your interest spread, as some of you call it, is impacted negatively, and that's what we call mismatch risk. There are probably a dozen subcategories of mismatch risk. We don't have time to talk about all of them. Also, not so much today, but in our next webinar, when we talk about economic value, we will talk about economic risk. And that's when market forces driven by changes in the interest rates impact the capital or net worth of the credit union. Same problem, interest rate risk, different way of approaching it than liquidity risk. We will do the liquidity risk webinar probably in January. So what's the problem? Problem is interest rates change and are difficult to predict. Now, it's true that for the last approximately 10 years, interest rates have not changed much. And there are probably people out there that have never experienced changing interest rates. If you've been in the industry and in the credit union system for less than 10 years, you've never seen interest rates really change significantly. Maybe just a tiny bit in the last year, but not a whole heck of a lot. But interest rates can and do change. We still view the last 10 years as an anomaly, and anticipate that rates are going to approach their natural levels rather than their manipulated levels at some point in the future. We'll see how that goes. Well, one of the important things that we need to talk about to prepare us to talk about interest rate risk is the concept of optionality. And for the most part, optionality belongs to the members. And optionality, or balance sheet optionality, is a term that you hear mentioned a lot, and simply refers to options that the members have After loans or deposits are made, basically, for the most part, especially with regard to loans, most of the optionality is with the member, and most of the optionality is with the member with regard to funding or shares and deposits. And so we're going to talk about that right now, as a matter of fact. First, a true or false question. This isn't a poll, but just think about this for a minute. Members will always exercise their options in their own best interests. True or false? Think about that. Whether that's true or false. It should be true, but it may not turn out to be that way. Okay, so here's a chart that allows us to illustrate optionality. And basically what we have here is a line which shows how the balance of a 30-year fixed rate mortgage amortizes. And you can see that when we get to the halfway point right here, most of the loan is still outstanding. In other words, if you get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage and pay for 15 years, you still owe almost $80,000 because most of what you pay in the first half of the loan it goes to interest. Here is the average life of the loan here at about 7 to 8 years. So most mortgage loans stay on the books for 7 or 8 years and then pay off. People move, they pay off early, they whatever happens, but they pay off early. So we have a couple of concepts here. One of them is prepayments. And the prepayments are basically at the option of the member. You can go in, if you're a credit union borrower, and pay off your loan or pay extra on your principal pretty much whenever you want. Very, very, very few credit unions have any prepayment penalties. Other institutions may, but credit unions typically don't. So if it's to your advantage, and one of the things that would make it to your advantage is if interest rates have gone down. If you have a 4% loan and you can refinance your loan at 3%, that's to your advantage. You may very well do that. Or not. If you get over here in this area right here, you are in what we call the extension area. And now basically what's happened is for whatever reasons, the economy says it's to your advantage not to pay off the loan. Maybe interest rates have gone up. This happened a lot in the 80s or 90s. People got loans in the 70s. They were relatively low rates. In the 80s and 90s, rates were much higher. People that normally would have paid off their loans and bought a new house or whatever did not. And they extended out. And many of them went that full 30 years and paid off their loans. So those are two examples of optionality. Got to go back and get my cursor back. And I got to erase all that stuff. There we go. Okay. So the optionality on loans is prepayments. In other words, you pay off before the loan's due, or you extend, which means you don't pay off and you extend the payments on your loans beyond the point where you'd have normally paid it off, which for most real estate loans is 6, 7, 8, 9 years, somewhere in there, 5 years. But you, for whatever reasons, you choose not to do that because the lender will always assume that you're going to either extend or prepay. They're never going to assume that you're going to take that loan out to maturity. Okay, there is even more optionality on the part of depositors. And this is one of the biggest challenges that credit union management has, is to understand and plan for the optionality of the members' shares and deposits. And I use those terms interchangeably, by the way, deposits and shares. Technically, they're different. In a federal credit union, it's all shares, and state charters, it's deposits and shares. Effectively, they're all deposits, and so we'll probably use that term because I forget to say shares and deposits sometimes. We have in that category what we call non-maturity deposits. These are the deposits that you have, and for most of you, it's the majority of your deposits with no contractual due date. Member puts money in. They can deposit at will, as you can see. If they have a bunch of money, they don't know what to do with it. They put it in the credit union, and they may stay there for a day, or it may stay there until they die. And it's very, very challenging to determine the level of rate sensitivity of these shares, because often they're not, the funds are not there to earn a rate. They're there for convenience or safety or security. So they may or may not be rate sensitive. Another issue that we have right now is early withdrawal on share CDs. Member may have come in a few years ago, bought a 5-year CD. Now the rate would be tempting to accept the penalty and reprice that CD at a higher rate. And members may very well have the opportunity to do that if rates continue to go up, as determined by the Federal Reserve. The conventional thinking is if regular shares can reprice daily, then they would be rate sensitive, because if the credit union or the bank across the street's hiring or paying a better rate, or all the shareholders will come in, take their money, take it across the street for a better rate. We found through experience that often is not the case. So there's another school of thought with regard to deposits optionality that is, we call, in the slide I've called it non-conventional thinking, but it's really more conventional than not. And what we found is regular shares, what are typically called regular shares, have a very low level of rate sensitivity. So as they're modeling these, as you're modeling these, or where someone like ourselves is doing it for you, maybe we should be using a lower level of rate sensitivity than not. Checking shares or checking accounts have almost no rate sensitivity. That's what we've learned over the last 30 years. And money market shares, which you would think by their nature would be very rate sensitive, are more rate sensitive than regular shares, but are not as sensitive as traditionally thought. And so what we're finding is increasing interest rates for many credit unions may have a positive impact on net income. And this is what happened in the previous decade. When rates went up, the target rate, Fed funds target rate, went up 425 basis points in about 36 months, around 30 to 36 months. I remember starting in 04 to 06 or 07, somewhere in that range. This is the scenario where short-term deposits are going up in cost to the credit union, checking account or more loans, specifically mortgage loans, fixed rate, aren't going up, should see contraction in the net income and the net interest income, and that didn't happen. Credit unions as a group increased their net interest income during the previous rates up scenario in the previous decade. And so the thought is maybe we should be modeling that. And in fact, that's probably the case that we're modeling for our clients, unless they've told us differently. We're actually going to model that increasing rates may be a good thing for the credit union. But the regulators are skeptical, and you've always got to deal with the regulators. They have a job to do. It's not an easy job. I was one once. It's a long time ago. I've repented. But the regulators do have a difficult job, and they're very skeptical about the bullets here that I've presented to you. Okay, let's do poll question number 2. Okay, looks like I've got that up there. Why do some savers not care about the yield that they earn on savings accounts? Because this is true. Some people don't care. So choices: don't understand, don't care, funds are not invested for yield, or who knows? Okay, we're almost all done there, so let's close this and share. Okay, so this is interesting. I was curious to what you say. The majority of you, almost half, are saying the funds aren't invested for yield. Some apparently savers don't care, and I believe that's true. I believe all of these are true for some members. They don't understand, and who knows? I don't know. I don't know the answer, but we do know for a near certainty that many of the funds at the credit union, primarily regular shares, checking, and money market shares to some extent, are not in the, let me reword that, in the past have not been rate sensitive. So basically, one of the things you have to do in order to do gap analysis or income sim is estimate the rate sensitivity of your funding. And traditionally, credit unions have done this kind of by the seat of their pants. We did that for a long time. We've been doing interest rate risk going clear back into the 80s, and it was really just kind of a guesstimate. Or you can do an internal share study. You can analyze and study the nature of your shares, your checking, whatever, and work it. You can use a credit union index. This is one of the things that we do for our clients. So we subscribe to an index. It's pretty pricey, but we can spread it over the cost of 300 or 400 clients, which does surveys and tells us what's going on in the marketplace. Or you can have someone come in, consultants, and do a share deposit study. And we do this also. And that's relatively pricey, $3,000 to $5,000, this will give you an estimate of what your shares have done in the past. Basically, nobody really knows for certain what they're going to do in the future. On the share and deposit study, I'll tell you right now. Stick around for the end. I will give you the contact information, and we can do what we call a basic deposit analysis or share study. That is done off your call reports. It's simple for us to do, and we will do that for you and send it to you absolutely free with no expectations whatsoever. And I'll give you the contact information to request a basic share and deposit study for your credit union, which we'll perform off your call reports, which are out there in the public space. Okay. Sometimes shares come in that we don't really know for sure why they're coming in. Prior to 2008, net regular shares, this is system-wide, were declining. In the fall of 2008, net regular shares started to increase. There's a lot of things that could have brought this on. Nobody knows for sure, and it might be different at each credit union. But one of the things that probably influenced that was the increase in the share insurance fund coverage to $250,000, which was later made permanent. Might have been a flight to safety, might have been a parking place. People just looking for a place to put their money. But if you've had shares come in seemingly out of the blue in the last few years, you probably need to account for those. In addition to what traditionally you may have thought about shares, there may be other things going on. So surge shares are just a fact of life. Their rate sensitivity may be different, and obviously this would be of a concern. This is something the regulators are really concerned about. At least they talk about it a lot. So you may want to consider the deposit study. And like I said, I'll give you the contact information at the end here, and you can request that. Absolutely no cost, no obligation for that basic deposit study. So as we're going to estimate interest rate risk, we've kind of laid a foundation here. What is interest rate risk and some of the factors that impact that risk? Basically, how are we gonna estimate it? What numbers are we gonna use? And there's a lot of numbers you can use, but we think there's some that are more important than others. One of those things that we think is really important is an estimate of future net interest income that's at risk given a set of variables. And then, of course, that's going to impact future net income at risk. And these are estimates. These are estimates looking forward. These aren't numbers looking at the current performance. These are estimates of what's going to happen in the future if a set of variables actually occurs. Another standard is net worth at risk. And this is looked at in two ways. One is actual operating losses that may occur if interest rates go in a direction that is painful. And the other one is net worth at risk as to its economic value. And you say, well, how serious could this be? Well, I can tell you from personal experience, in the 80s and 90s, I have personally witnessed credit unions and other financial institutions, savings and loans and banks, that saw their capital eroded to the point where they were required to merge or were liquidated because of interest rate risk. So I'm not saying that's going to happen. In fact, I think it's highly unlikely that it would happen in the foreseeable future, but it is possible and we need to prepare for it. There's different methodologies to estimate interest rate risk. Two that we're going to talk about today and the next 20 to 30 minutes is our gap analysis, which many of you are familiar with, and income simulation. NEV, or net economic value, or if you're from the banking world, that term is called economic value of equity, or EVE, all the same thing. Why NCOA didn't adopt the economic value term, I don't understand. There are probably some technical differences there. We'll talk about that at our next webinar, I think is scheduled in December. We'll talk about economic value. Today, let's talk about gap analysis. Gap analysis analyzes the repricing points and volumes of interest-bearing assets and liabilities and calculates a gap. In order to do a gap analysis, you need to understand the concept and estimate prepayments and extensions. Talked about that a minute ago. Prepayments, when people pay off their loan early. Extensions, when they don't pay it off when you think they do. This isn't the loan extension, a payment extension. This is when you are assuming and banking and managing to the idea that a mortgage loan is going to pay off in 7 years, and it doesn't. That's an extension. And betas, lags, and decay. Betas is simply refers to how fast rates will move. Lag refers to self-defining. It's a lag between when the market rates move and your rates move, and the decay simply refers to into shares leaving the credit union for whatever reason. And so we need to understand those things if we're going to do a gap analysis and or a income simulation. So let's go to poll question number 3. Which is, do you use gap analysis? And pretty simple, yes, no, or you're not sure. Okay, that is everybody. Boy, we got a responsive group today. So a little over half of you are using gap analysis. Most of you are either not sure or are not using it. I'm going to tell you that gap analysis probably isn't going to meet all the requirements for most larger credit unions, but for, let's get rid of that thing. For some of you, it may work out well, and certainly provides helpful information. And so here's a typical gap analysis, and let me get my pen over here. So basically, we're doing this gap, and here's your balance sheet right here. We're going to estimate when the balance sheet is going to reprice, and we're looking at 1 year. It's really hard to draw with this mouse, by the way, so forgive me for that. So we've got first mortgage loans, and we're estimating that out of 33 million, 11 million will reprice in year one. We've got some secured loans and we've got some unsecured loans. So 31,000 out of our 31 million out of our 61 million in loans is going to give us the opportunity to reset the price or the interest rate in year one, and 30 million, we will have no option to reset the price. Investments are usually pretty straightforward. We have overnight investments, we have investment CDs, we have agencies. Clearly our agencies are long-term. None of those apply. Your credit union may very well be different. We see a lot of credit unions where all of their investment portfolio is within a year. That's your decision to make. Regular shares, we've made some estimates here as to how rate sensitive our regular shares are. You can see here, we're saying our checking accounts are not rate sensitive at all. Our regular shares have some rate sensitivity. Our money market shares are really rate sensitive. Probably not the case, but that's what the example shows. And share CDs are really rate sensitive. So total shares repricing in year one are 69 million. So going up here, we have assets repricing at 43 million. We have deposits and funding repricing at 69 million, which is a net negative gap of 26 million. And that's what gap analysis is. We're analyzing this gap, which typically for most credit unions is positive. Now, you say, well, what if our assumptions are different, then this could wind up anywhere you want. You may very well want to argue that regular shares are not rate sensitive. Money market shares are not as rate sensitive as we have them here. That could easily change the outcome. But you can see here that we've estimated the price sensitivity going back up here to the assets of 43 million in assets, and we haven't estimated anything about over half of the assets, basically. The other thing that's missing here, try and catch up with my notes here. The other thing that's missing here is, even though we know at least an estimate of what's going to reprice, what's not going to reprice in year one, first problem is we're only looking at year one and we're not looking out beyond year one. And you can see the majority of our assets do not reprice in year one. And we don't know how this is going to impact our net interest income and our net income. And we've already said that's two of the quantifiers that we want to estimate, is forecasted net interest income and forecasted net income. And GAAP doesn't do that for us. So it's a little bit of a problem. It's certainly getting us partway down the road, but not all the way. So GAAP analysis does have some advantages. One of those is it's pretty easy to do. Now, you can get really complex even in a GAAP analysis, but typically you can do a GAAP analysis on an Excel spreadsheet. It's straightforward and easy to understand. It's suitable for small credit unions with simple balance sheets. And I like it because I like this because it's a roadmap for me. I can kind of see where the components of my balance sheet are. especially if you did this out for 2 or 3 years instead of just 1 year, which is what we do. We do it for 2 to 3 years for our clients. You can kind of see what's happening, kind of explains what's happening in the income simulation. So I find it helpful, even though it's not going to get me to the end of the road where I want to go, because it does not allow me to estimate NII, net interest income at risk, doesn't allow me to estimate net income at risk, future net income, and it doesn't allow me to estimate the value of future net worth. And it misses the interest rate risk that lies beyond the testing time frame, which even if you're going out 2 to 3 years, you still have rate risk out there beyond that time frame. So not going to get us where we want to go, except for really small, really simple, non-complex credit unions. So the next step is to take that information and put some numbers to it and estimate interest income and interest expense in future periods. That's all income simulation is an estimate of interest income and interest expense in future periods, typically 1 month to 3 years. And it focuses on net interest income at risk and net income at risk. And this does, the income simulation does provide an estimate of risk to net interest income and net income in future periods. So it's giving us what we already said that we want to see in our parameters. What do we need to know? Well, we need to know how much of our net interest income and our net income are at risk. And so it's likely to do that. Typically in an income simulation, we do a benchmark right here. We do the benchmark. This is going to give us, you know, something to compare to. Benchmark's just exactly what it says it is. And then typically we will do some type of a stress test. Could be static or dynamic. Most of the time we do a static, which simply means we assume the composition of the balance sheet won't change a whole lot. And we have to estimate betas and lags. We have to, and that simply is an estimate of how rate sensitive our deposits are and our shares, and how far they will lag in changing. And usually the lags are relatively short. And so we can do a stress test. We can also do a likely scenario, what we think is actually going to happen. We can also do some what we call sensitivity testing, where we say, well, what if this happened or what if that happened? We might be testing a 300 basis point rates up scenario, but you say, well, what would happen if that was 400? Well, let's go take a look. So we can run 300 and 400. And then regulators, NCUA, and most of you, if not all of you, are NCUA insured, if not federally chartered. They have a couple of things they want to see. They want to see a scenario called shares at par, which we vehemently disagree with, but that's what they want to see. And we found it's better just to do it and let them see it. And they have also published some decay rates that they want to see run. They're not saying these are what you should be using, but they want to see the outcomes. And this primarily impacts the net economic value, not the income simulation. So we'll talk about those at our next session in December. So you say, well, what are we going to do with this income simulation? Well, here's all the things we can run. I counted them up here. Basically, we typically run up to 13 or 14 different scenarios in rates up and rates down. You say, well, how can you run rates down? Truth is, it's really hard to do right now. So we're focused on the rates up scenarios, which we would typically run 5 to 7 scenarios in a rates up scenario and a rates up shock, including the regulatory requests. And that's just in our simple basic LM Pro plan. So It's income simulation is one of those things in the concept that's really simple. Hey, you're going to estimate interest income, you're going to estimate interest expense, put a couple of variables in there, and it works, but not that easily, basically. So here's an example of how the outcomes are presented. This is a summary type report that would go to an ALCO or to directors, and to the management of the credit union, depending on how you want to do this. So you can see here we have estimated at the top line benchmark net interest income. So this is our benchmark scenario. Net interest income is going to be $9 million. This is a three-year cumulative. You say, well, what about breaking it out? Well, you can do that. We do that for our clients. We break it out 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and we can even break it out to quarterly if a client wants to see it. But there's the estimate. This is the summary. And then stressed net interest income at 300 basis points, we see a drop to $7.9 million. So NII at risk is just right about $1 million. That's 11% of the benchmark. So that 1,032,000 is 11% of the 9 million. We set in this example, and this is an example only, a guideline of a minus 15. So the credit union is within their guideline. We set a benchmark net income guideline of 500,000, and we're seeing stressed net income negative 532. Let's go on to the next page. Here's graphically we're presenting that. We have basically the blue line up here, benchmark net interest income. This is the output for 12 quarters, 12 forecasted quarters. The blue line at 750,000 is, and this is a scenario where rates don't change. So that benchmark line is going to be flat. And then the stressed net interest income, you can see it goes down for, it's the brown line, goes down for four quarters and then starts to recover. And we've also put a guideline in there. Here's where our board of directors has set our guideline. And you can see we actually do drop below the guideline for three or four quarters, it looks like, but not a whole heck of a lot. And here's our forecasted quarterly net income. And you can see that we experienced losses for a while. Okay, so these typically are not the scenarios we would use, because we're probably going to say, you know what, these are what a lot of regulators would like us to use and to manage to, but we just believe that if you are managing to these scenarios and assuming that this is going to happen, you might not be doing yourselves any favors. So if you have questions about, you know, what kind of scenarios you should be running, given your circumstances, if you're a client that we do this for you, by all means, give us a call and we'll review the scenarios. If you're not a client, we'd be happy to chat with you about the scenarios that you're running. But probably we're going to suggest that you run a less severe scenario than this. You can run this one too, and you can run all those scenarios that the regulators want to run. But it's just really important that everybody understand that the outcome on these scenarios, whatever model you're using, is going to be very severe if you run traditional scenarios. If you take a realistic look at shares and anticipate how they performed in the past, the scenarios are far less stressful. So let's get down to poll question number four. It's a pretty simple question. Do you use income simulation? So it's a yes or a no. Wow. Okay. Looks like the majority are using income simulation, and we've got almost everybody, if not everybody, voting. So let's So about two-thirds of you are using income simulation, and about another third aren't sure. We're going to hide that and get back to our slides. I'm going to say, and this is based on my experience, that probably, unless you're just a really small, very simple balance sheet, you should be using income simulation. It has its weaknesses. In fact, let's talk about the pluses and minuses, and then I'll finish that statement. Positives on income simulation. The concept is simple. It's as simple as a concept can get. Another nice thing is it uses familiar terms. It uses terms like forecasted loan income. You don't have to be a financial analyst to understand what forecasted loan income is, or forecasted net interest income. It's the terminology is what most of you are familiar with. Even if you're not a financial professional, you're probably familiar with this terminology. So that is really helpful. And it's a very effective, I'm going to have to go back here. Let's go, here we go. It's a very effective estimate of risk to net interest income, and we recommend that the majority of you probably should be using some form of income simulation. There are some negatives. Uses many complex assumptions. So in its concept is simple. When you actually start to do it, it just gets really complex. And you just think of all of the variables that you have to deal with, and it gets complex. And that's why it typically only goes out for a year to 3 years. We use 3 years, and we've always used that. A lot of people still just use a year. We think it's reliable beyond a year, but much less so the farther out you go. And it will miss all of the interest rate risk, anything that's going on in your balance sheet beyond whatever period you're running this. So if you're running this for a year, anything that matures, resets in pricing, or may occur out beyond that year isn't going to be reflected in your income sim. And that, in our mind, is a real weakness. But I am going to say that hopefully, and the poll bore that out, the majority, and I'd guess many of those that weren't sure probably are using it. That's good news. And we strongly recommend that you should be using Income Sim if you happen to be one of our clients. That is one of the scenarios that we're going to run, is an income simulation scenario, depending on what level you're at, multiple scenarios. And if you're not a client, you have questions about what you should be running, we'd be happy to chat with you. So let's go ahead and summarize what we've done today. Credit union balance sheets may harbor IRR, interest rate risk, or they may not. Like I said, if you look at it from a traditional standpoint, traditional testing, there's a lot of risk out there. If you look at it based on historical, outcomes and say, well, why would it be different today than it was 10 years ago? Well, it could be, but will it be significantly different or not? And I don't know how to answer that question, but my personal feeling is probably not that much different. Maybe not. And that's why you need to run multiple scenarios and review them and make a decision there. The concept of balance sheet optionality, how long members are going to leave their shares in, how rate sensitive your members are, what's going to happen to your mortgage loan portfolio if rates go up or if rates go down is a major challenge. Share and deposit study provides some answers. And I'm going to, next slide, I'm going to show you how you can get a basic deposit analysis absolutely free with no obligation. Gap analysis takes us partway, not to where we want to go, but it gets us partway and we find it helpful. Income simulation provides estimates of interest rate risk using the desired metrics. The desired metrics, the two that it gives us, are forecasted net interest income. Here's how much net interest income you're going to have. And then in the stress testing, it's going to show us how. Okay. The income simulation, I just got a note here. I'll talk about that with you in just a sec. Forecasted net interest income and forecasted net income, two metrics that you need to know, even though they're estimates. And your regulators continue to be concerned with potential interest rate risk, even though some of us don't believe that the potential is really high at this point in time. There's our next webinar will be asset and liability management. And we're going to tell you about in-house or outsourcing. And then y'all have the slides, so I'll leave these with you. And next one is tell us a little about who we are. Basically, we've been doing this since 1983. We've literally provided interest rate risk analysis for over 600 credit unions over the years, and do that on an ongoing basis for over 300 credit unions at the present time. We do provide ALM and liquidity risk management and consulting through our quarterly ALM Pro service. We offer third-party ALM policy and process validation and can provide complete deposit analysis services. And we will also be offering a CECL solution that is geared to small credit unions. When I say small credit unions, I mean under 500 million. Most of the CECL solutions that we're seeing out there are geared to $100 million or $1 billion portfolios. Okay, if you would like to receive what we call a basic share study, and this is a basic share study, it's actually a beta analysis that analyzes the sensitivity of your shares from your call report. It's a a very basic analysis. It's done off your call report. We'll do that at no charge or absolutely no obligation. And to do that, simply email Michelle there at the bottom, or Matt, or me. Any one of the three will get that rolling for you. It might take us a day or two if we have to be really busy that day, but we would be happy to send that to you and hopefully have a chance to visit with you for a few minutes and just explain what you're getting there. It's not a full-blown share study. Hopefully I didn't imply that it would be a full-blown share study or share analysis. Which obviously the workload there is a little bit beyond no charge. So if you would like that, or you can call at the 800 number there, or email, or get a hold of us, however you choose, and we'll do that for you. It's a pleasure for me to make this presentation today. Like I say, this is geared to volunteers. We're hoping this, as we said, this will be a four-part webinar, a series of four webinars available on our website on demand after the first of the year for your directors as new directors come in or directors want to refresh their training. No charge, absolutely no obligation, and we'll be happy to provide that. If you have questions that we didn't get answered today, by all means, text, or probably not text, probably email us. Give us a call. We'll be happy to chat with you. Thank you very much for attending. It's our pleasure to do this. This is the part of my job I really like doing, interacting with clients and credit union people. They're among the very best people in the world. And with that, I'll sign off and say thank you very much. Bye-bye.